What I'm wanting to talk about this morning, we're going to have two lectures. The first one, cinema in the city. Really to think about the relationship between film as a very important mode of representation and cities. For a long time in the 20th century, there was a very particular relationship between film and cities. Film as the first form of a moving image, a dynamic image, and the new forms of movement, speed, mobility that characterized modern cities. In the second lecture, I want to talk about the way in which the screen starts to move outside of the institutional forms of the cinema and starts to become part of the urban fabric itself. And I think this changes the way in which representation works in relation to the city. One of the things that I think is distinctive when we look at the relation cinema and the city is we can see that it, in a way, prefigures, it suggests a media system in which images start to feed back, start to communicate to the situations in which people live. The film I'm going to particularly talk about this morning is an old film called The Man with the Movie Camera, made in 1929 in the Soviet Union by the filmmaker Ziga Vertov. Has anybody seen that film? Does anybody know of that film? A couple of you. I hope to be able to show you some sequences from that film. The reason I've chosen that film is I think it's a very particular example of the way in which cinema emerges as an experimental form for representing the distinctive situation of the modern city. And the modern city became a very different type of living space than classical cities, traditional cities. So I'll go through this in a little bit more detail, but the modern city I'm talking about, maybe from the 1880s or the beginning of the 20th century, the kinds of changes that we associate with industrialization started to make a very different living environment. And to a lot of filmmakers and artists and intellectuals at that time, cinema was the primary way of representing this new environment, this new living space. What I want to develop through this lecture, after we talk about Man with the Movie Camera, a film made in the 1920s in the silent film era, is to look at what its implications are for contemporary media culture, and particularly a very interesting project that was started 5 years ago by an American artist, Perry Bard, called Man with the Movie Camera, The Global Remake, which is literally an internet-based participatory remake of Ziga Vertov's film. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about, what I'm trying to develop is this idea that cinema, just over 100 years ago, becomes what we might call the first really modern image, a moving technological image. It produces a particular way of viewing the city, of understanding the city. It allows us to think about the city not just as material, as architecture, but also as something that's composed of how we imagine spaces. It gives us a new sense of how urban spaces might be articulated together, that's joined together. It starts to produce this growing interplay between media and cities that I think is very distinctive part of late 20th century, early 21st century life. So cinema is a very distinctive moment in establishing this feedback loop between media and cities, between media and urban spaces. So what I want to do in this first lecture is to talk about the context of the modern city, what kind of changes there were in modern cities. I'm going to talk about the context of the modern city, how cities changed, what kind of experience had to be represented in cities. I want to talk a little bit about inventing the language of cinema, the distinctive form of visual language that cinema is associated with. And this is something that Man with the Movie Camera explores very fully. I want to talk a little bit about the city's symphony as a genre, Man with the Movie Camera and Walter Ruttmann's film Berlin, Symphony of a Great City, are the two films associated with this idea of the city symphony genre. And then finally, as I said, I want to draw some lessons from that film from the 1920s to the present to think about how it asks us to, if we wanted to represent a city today, what are the lessons we might draw from a film like Man with the Movie Camera or from its global remake? All right, as I said, Man with the Movie Camera is a film made in 1929, so it's at the end of an extraordinary period of change in urban life. It's a very explicit response to the city as a radically altered form of social life, a new kind of social life. The great French sociologist Henri Lefebvre wrote about what had happened to urban space in that time. He says, around 1910, the fact is a certain space, and he means the space of the classical city, of classical forms of representation and knowledge, is shattered. I think all over the world, in cities as they were, being infiltrated by new technologies, by new forms of social organization, new modes of production, factory production, and so on, people had this very strong sense that the city had become a very different type of space. It was faster. There was a different sense of time emerging. There were a lot more encounters with people. Some of these changes had accrued very rapidly in the space of just a generation. And I'll just list some of the changes to think about that happened from around the 1880s to the 1920s. Not uniformly, not everywhere in cities, but in certain parts of cities. Probably the biggest one was electrification. So many things we take for granted, lights, power on computers, fans, etc., etc. So electrification of cities was an enormously important event that started to happen in the 1880s and 1890s. Not only for production, for driving machines, but for lighting, for street lighting, for advertising signs. New forms of motor vehicles, electric trams, electric trains, the first cars, but also other types of vehicles, things like elevators. So you start to get, for the first time, high-rise buildings. Until you have an elevator, having a building that's more than, say, 6 or 8 floors high is useless. No one wants to climb all the stairs. You get new media and communication technologies emerging at this time. Photography, illustrated magazines, picture newspapers, but particularly telephones. The first telephones are around from the 1880s, 1890s. And of course, cinema itself. You start to see the emergence of large-scale industry. Factory production, production line, the idea of organizing production scientifically associated with Frederick Taylor, simplifying the movements taken to produce an object. The experience of the city is characterized by huge crowds. Cities grew very rapidly at this time from the mid-19th century through to the first part of the 20th century. Enormous numbers of people were flooding in from the countryside, a phenomenon we still see in China today. Social life in cities becomes very distinctive. It's, as the German sociologist Georg Simmel says, it's life among strangers for the first time. And he means this in a very specific way. Prior to the modern city, the scale of the modern city, if you lived in a small town or a village, you tended to know most people. There were interlocking family networks or friendship networks. If someone was a stranger, they came and they were either quickly assimilated or they left. They moved on. In the city, from that period, around the beginning of the 20th century, a new sort of social life starts to become typical, that we live among people we don't know personally. So all kinds of new architectural forms emerge around this time, but particularly the distinctive architectural form of the modern city, the skyscraper. So you see the first skyscrapers emerging in the 1880s, 1890s, and start to multiply on the skylines of cities like Chicago and New York. steel frame construction, glass curtain walls, still the form of the skyline that's taking shape in Pudong today. You see a new kind of life based around consumption of commodities. So you get new modes of shopping are invented in the city at this time. From the 1850s, you start to see the first department stores. The idea of a big space with a lot of goods that are on display that people can wander amongst and choose, rather than going into a small shop where the goods are separated off from the customers by the counter and you have personal service. And last but not least, you start to see very radical changes in art, in representation. Classically, we would talk about this in terms of the break in painting in the West, particularly with the invention of Cubism, associated with Pablo Picasso, Georges Braque, and artists like that, where you move away from a form of perspective, of centered linear perspective that had dominated painting for maybe 400 years, and you start to have painted frame, picture frames that are broken up into different perspectives. But I think cinema plays a very important role in this change in representation also, because of the fact that you have a moving image and you have to articulate, join those fragments of images together in new ways. The key to this new environment, this new urban environment, is its sense of dynamism. And you'll see this very much in a film like Man with a Movie Camera. It's really about celebrating movement, speed, things moving faster. The juxtaposition of very different types of experiences, very different types of things. The idea of old hierarchies between country and city, hierarchies between classes, between genders, starting to break down. The city becoming this environment in which social life might be reimagined, reinvented. But it's always had this sense of a very ambivalent environment. On the one hand, you have this promise that if you come to the city, and this is the journey countless millions of people have made, you come to the city to find a new life, to reinvent yourself. But at the same time, there's a risk of losing one's sense of community, one's sense of attachment to other people, what the sociologists talk about as anomie, a sense of being lost amongst the complexity, the impersonal environment, the anonymity of the city. This is the very distinctive milieu that cinema emerges in. And it's really quickly recognized as a new tool for capturing this different reality. Can I move it to full screen? Oh, there. This only run... No, that's not the right one. This one. It only runs for about 10 seconds. This is a film shot by the Edison Company in New York in 1896. I didn't pick it because it's anything exceptional. It's very bad quality. That's it. Early cinematic views of the city were literally just that. They were just views. What people tended to do was plonk the camera down in one place and just let life go on in front of it. They were very short. You know, this was a hand-cranked camera. It might run, that piece runs 14 seconds. Sometimes they would run up to 30 seconds, maybe 1 minute. The film historian Tom Gunning writes, the first films shown were primarily big city affairs. Nearly all early film documents present what he calls a mise en abyme. It's this relationship between the audience on the street and the audience in the cinema watching themselves. So he says, they all present a mise en abyme of audiences filling vaudeville halls from busy city streets in order to see projected on the screen busy city streets. In other words, one of the primary subjects of early film was to show the city. And people were fascinated by this. They would go into the movie halls to see the urban reality that they were living amongst. There were some exceptions to this rule of the static camera, just putting the camera down and watching life move past in front of you. Sometimes they'd put the camera onto a moving vehicle, for instance, a tram or a horse and cart or a train. But it was pretty rare. And it's interesting to think about that period from, say, 1896 up until around 1914, 1915, which is the period in which what we might call the language of cinema starts to be invented, and particularly the language of montage, of how to construct scenes that have multiple shots, of how to integrate close-ups with long shots, etc., etc. So you start to have this sense of a cinematic space that isn't simply about pointing the camera at a room, but can incorporate multiple perspectives, but still gives the viewer a coherent sense of that space. And also in terms of film narrative at the time, we start to see the emergence of how to depict simultaneous encounters. That old idea of something's happening over here, we cut away to a scene over here, it's going on at the same time. In a novel, we might say, meanwhile. You're cutting between two different scenarios. And the audience start to understand, these aren't linear, these are actually happening at the same time. There's this sense of simultaneity between these two events. This was something that took probably 10 or 15 years to emerge as filmmakers all around the world were experimenting with film scenarios. So when the first multi-shot films were done, the succession between shots was always temporal succession. The time would run in a neat line. So one shot meant, if there was a second shot, it meant this happened after the first shot. As film evolves into a more complex storytelling form, an alternative reading becomes possible. And you see this particularly in films by the American filmmaker D.W. Griffiths from around 1907 to 1914. The switching between different scenes, and it means that there's an encounter of simultaneity. By the time you get up to the 1920s, this is very much an accustomed part of filmmaking language, as it is for us today. It's something we take for granted, that you can show a scene, and in fact you will show a scene, not with a single shot, but with multiple shots, integrating close-ups, different angles, different perspectives. The German critic Walter Benjamin wrote in his famous essay, The Work of Art in the Age of Technological Reproduction, written back in the 1930s, and he says, realism in film is what he called second degree or second order realism. It's not based on a simple correspondence between the image and what it represents. It's based upon a special procedure, montage, editing, adjusting the different shots. So you get a very different sense of realism from photography. The realism of the photograph depends upon the image looking like the scene it represents. With cinema, it's about articulating, joining together these different shots into a dynamic form. The City Symphony is a genre. As I say, it develops in the 1920s, at the time that cinematic language has matured. But critically, it's before there is sound film, before there is synchronized sound, before there is talking film. And this is a very interesting period of cinema because, on the one hand, it's a very international form. Hollywood existed from around World War I, 1914, 1915, but it wasn't yet dominant in world cinema the way it became in the 1930s and 1940s. There were many centres of film production in Europe, particularly in Scandinavia, in France, Italy, Germany, in the UK, in other countries, in Shanghai. And there was a much more international circulation of films at that time. The introduction of synchronized sound at the end of the 1920s fragments cinema into national territories. and it becomes increasingly dominated by American cinema over a period of time. So City Symphony films, these ones we're talking about, belong to a particular moment of cinema, an experimentation with visual form and to some extent with sound form, because I shouldn't say that even though there wasn't synchronized talking, films were very rarely silent or never silent, really. They used to have live musical accompaniment. So the City Symphony films are a kind of a high point of this experimental moment of cinema. And that's why I think something like Man with a Movie Camera is very interesting to look at today. It's deliberately experimental. I want to try and show you the first sequence of the film. Okay, we have sound. Films would regularly have what they called intertitles, so it would be what the characters are saying or something. Vertov declares at the beginning of this film, this is going to be a film without titles. So the only titles that are used in the film are at the beginning of the film. And he says this is going to be a new type of film, a film experiment. What he's really interested in is how cinema, how the new language that has been pioneered with moving pictures can give us a new sense of this different living environment of the city. So I'll show you just the first little sequence of this film. This has actually got a new soundtrack, I should add, one that was done about 10 years ago, because obviously when Vertov made the film, he couldn't record the soundtrack, but it's based upon instructions that he left, and very much like other Russian composers of the time, like Prokofiev, Vertov is interested in a soundtrack that incorporates the noises of the city, the noises of machines, of car horns, of all kinds of events that take place in the city. So I just turn the sound down and leave it running while... I mean, what's interesting there is he's saying, look, we're going to create a new international language, a language of the moving image. It's going to be really different. It's nothing to do with literature. It's nothing to do with theatre. He wants to remove it from what he sees as existing bourgeois art forms. He also says it's nothing to do with fiction films. This is going to be what we would now call documentary film, but there wasn't really a term for it. He calls it Kino Pravda, film truth. Life caught unawares. And you see, part of the conceit of this film is that it's a diary of a cameraman. It's the life of a cameraman going around a fictional city. It's actually built from fragments of five different cities. What he films in the course of a day in the city. And the beginning shows you the camera, the scene in which it's going to be projected. And the end of the film will actually show you the audience coming into the theatre and watching all the scenes that we've seen being constructed throughout the film. So it's a film that has this feedback loop, this form of self-reflexivity is an incredibly important part of it. Now, I might just leave Vertov there for a minute. You can see the connection to the symphony. He's literally showing here an orchestra tuning up, ready to play, comparing it to the assembly of the film.